Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's exactly 6 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. As usual, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. You can leave us a comment and share this audio.
Coming up, Nigeria's ruling party, All Progressive Congress, APC, in crisis following a split.
The new party, so to speak, we're talking of the Reform All Progressives Congress. They're saying that instead of sharing positions together, the president is not doing that. And in terms of security, they're also saying that there is no security in Nigeria.
Human Rights Watch released a report on torture of ethnic Somalis at a secret jail in Ogaden as prisoners detail their horrific experiences.
The Liyu Special Police and the prison's guard assembled prisoners, undressed them, tied their penises, then one person pulls the other and they beat them with thick canes.
And another poisoning case with the nerve agent Novichok in Britain as Russia accuses UK of dirty politics.
You heard it right. We have a lot lined up for you today. But first, we hear news of what has been happening around the world.
I'm Eunice Wanjiro with DW News. British police have confirmed that two people who fell critically ill near the market town of Salisbury were poisoned with the nerve agent Novichok. The police say it could be an after effect of an early attack on former Russian spy and his daughter in the town that used the same poison. Addressing the British Parliament on Thursday, Interior Minister Sajid Javid said sites from the previous incident have been decontaminated and are safe.
All six sites that were visited by the pair before they collapsed have been cordoned off and are being securely guarded as a precaution. An investigation has started to work out how these two individuals came into contact with the nerve agent.
At a meeting on Thursday with British Prime Minister Theresa May, German Chancellor Angela Merkel stressed the importance of bilateral talks as Brexit negotiations heat up. Merkel said Britain and Germany would continue to be closely linked, especially in the areas of foreign and security policy. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban have traded accusations over their different views on migration during talks in Berlin. Merkel met with Orban as part of her efforts to win support for her tough new migration policy. After the meeting, Merkel said she wants to protect Europe's humanity regarding migrants. She criticized Hungary for dodging its EU responsibilities. Orban said the best way to show humanity is for Europe to remove incentives for migrants to come to the continent.
We don't think it's fair that people in Germany accuse us of lacking in solidarity. There are 8,000 armed soldiers standing on the border 24 hours a day. Migrants on their way to Germany would have to get past them first. And despite the agreement with Turkey, if there were no armed Hungarians guarding the border, then 4,000 to 5,000 people would come to Germany on a daily basis. We protect you from that. That is solidarity.
This news comes to you from DW's Germany's international broadcaster. Djibouti on Thursday launched the first phase of Africa's biggest free trade zone, seeking to capitalize on its strategic position on one of the world's busiest trade routes. At a ceremony in the capital, President Ismail Omar Guelleh hailed the scheme as the culmination of infrastructure projects, boosting Djibouti's place in international trade and commerce. Moving on, Sierra Leone's former vice president and an ex-minister have been arrested on corruption charges. Victor Bukari Faure, who served as former leader Ernest Bai Koroma's deputy till April, and former mines minister Minkailu Mansere were held at the Anti-Corruption Commission, the body head said. Syrian and Russian forces have resumed strikes against rebel-held areas in the southwest of Syria. The renewed assault comes after talks between rebel groups and Russia collapsed. The UN estimates over 300,000 people have fled the fighting in Daraa province. It is one of the last rebel strongholds after more than 7 years of war. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download the DW app or up on Apple and Google Play. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jane Nyingi.
And my name is Ipora Nyambura. Thank you to all our listeners on DW Africa. Chinyere Ezaifa and Nick Omor Bonifo, welcome to the program.
Absolutely.
We start off in Nigeria, where the ruling party All Progressive Congress, APC, has suffered a major setback following the emergence of a splinter group calling itself Reformed APC or RAPC. President Muhammadu Buhari's former secretary, Buba Galadima, is the chairman of the splinter group.
Now, the crisis comes just a few months to the general elections, which President Buhari is expected to seek a second term in office. The new party includes all the progressive forces in the ruling APC. Earlier, I spoke to DW's Ben Shemang, who is in Abuja, and he explains the root cause of the breakup.
Well, you see, before the President Buhari could come to power, he had earlier contested two times without winning. So they decided to go back to the drawing board, call other political parties, different political parties, and they decided if they could come together, they would be able to defeat the then ruling People's Democratic Party. And that was exactly what they did. What they expected was they should share positions equally, but the new party, so to speak, we're talking of the Reform All Progressives Congress, they're saying that instead of sharing positions together, the president is not doing that. And in terms of security, they're also saying that there is no security in Nigeria, among many other allegations.
So what you mean is that the current commotion can squarely be blamed on President Buhari?
Absolutely. That is what the interim chairman, talking of Buba Galadima, is saying.
It is obvious that the leadership of the APC has decided to shut out members of the APC as well as other members who have raised the genuine grievances under the circumstances have come together to take control and give legitimacy to APC to be now known as and called Reform APC.
That's Buba Galadima, the interim chairman of the Reform All Progressive Congress. He is saying that they will actually have to pull out and form a new party.
Now, talking of formation of a new party, how will this split affect President Buhari's future politically and his desire to be re-elected early next year?
Incidentally, as we are talking, he's not taking it lying down fallow or lying down low, rather. What he has done is to call also leaders of thought within the All Progressives Congress, and they've been able to, they are holding meetings with some of the governors, and it is too early, therefore, to say that whether Buhari will win or not win the elections that will be coming up early 2019. But certainly, the ruling party is having it tough now, trying to control the mass exit from the party. So Nigerians are also worried. They want cohesion, leadership in Africa, as it is said. Now they're not seeing what is being provided by the ruling All Progressives Party. So Nigeria, there's political tension in the country.
DW's Ben Shemang giving us an insight of the current political crisis in the ruling All Progressive Congress. And on our Facebook page, we asked if this will affect Buhari's bid for a second term next year. And Uche Uji says Buhari's second term is dead on arrival.
And Chinyere Ezaifa actually agrees with that. He says the president's bid for the second term has failed on arrival. Apart from the splinter group, the president is focused more on re-election bid and paying less attention to several economic challenges of the country, such as the killings of the Fulani herdsmen. And Kitayo also says Buba Galadima and his people are like a drop of water in an ocean. You can also join this conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yes, indeed. Moving on, British Prime Minister Theresa May has stated that the police will leave no stone unturned in the investigation after a second incident involving the nerve agent poison. The Soviet-designed poison Novichok was also used back in March in an attack on a former Russian spy and his daughter.
Britain accuses Russia of instigating the March attack. Now, Moscow is accusing Britain of playing dirty politics as London demands answers from the Kremlin. Marisina with more of that report.
According to British police, a couple in their 40s are in critical condition after being poisoned close to Salisbury by the nerve agent Novichok. Novichok is the same Soviet-designed agent that nearly killed former spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia back in March. Authorities stated that they believe the two new victims were not directly targeted, but sickened as a consequence of the previous attack. Britain's Interior Minister Javid addressed the UK Parliament on the issue earlier today. He described the use of chemical weapons as barbaric and inhumane and stated,
"It is completely unacceptable for our people to be either deliberate or accidental targets, or for our streets, our parks, our towns to be dumping grounds for poison."
Back in March, Britain accused Russia of being behind the Skripal's poisoning, but Moscow denied any involvement. In light of the most recent incident, tensions between the United Kingdom and Russia reemerged. Earlier today, Kremlin spokesperson Peskov told reporters that Russia continues to categorically deny any involvement in the cases. While Interior Minister Javid urged that no premature conclusion should be made, he also stated,
"The eyes of the world are currently on Russia, not least because of the World Cup. It is now time that the Russian state comes forward and explains exactly what has gone on."
The new case has surfaced just days before a NATO summit is expected to address the worsening relations between Russia and the West.
DW's Marie Sina.
Going back to Africa, and this time to Ethiopia, the government has fired five senior prison officials as it confronts allegations of torture and other abuses of inmates. The firing came shortly before a human rights report detailing cases of torture, rape and humiliation in Jail Ogaden, situated in the country's eastern Somalia region. According to some of the detainees, some of the security officers even ordered rape and denied them food. We hear from two former prisoners.
The Liyu Special Police and the prison's guard assemble prisoners, undress them, tie their penises, then one person pulls the other and they beat them with thick canes. The Liyu Police Force then makes them lie down together on their chest as they walk all over them, forcing them to roll around in the mud.
You are taken to a dark place and forced to say, "I love and support ONLF." When you don't say these words, your two hands and feet are cuffed together so that you can no longer move. When the firewood turns into charcoal, it is scooped with a spade and spread like a bedding. Then a person is rolled over it while cuffed on both hands and legs to burn and scare them into saying what they want them to say.
Those are prisoners at Jail Ogaden in Ethiopia detailing their horrific experiences.
And Zippy, the Human Rights Watch is now calling for an investigation by the Ethiopian government into the allegations concerning suspected members of the separatist Ogaden National Liberation Front. And Felix Horn is among those who conducted that research.
There has often been silence from Ethiopia's government on the abuses that security officials commit. But in mid-June, Ethiopia's new Prime Minister Abiy, admitted that torture was a problem in Ethiopia's place of detention in an address he gave to Parliament. This is a really positive step. But what we hope now is that the perpetrators identified in this report, including the Somali regional president Abdi Ili, are held to account for the abuses that happened there.
That is Felix Horn, a human rights researcher at Human Rights Watch.
And now going back to our top story, there is crisis in the ruling party in Nigeria, All Progress Congress. And there has emerged a splitter group. And on our Facebook page, we asked, how do you think this will affect Buhari's bid for a second term next year? And we are still receiving your comments.
Irene Mokoloku says Buhari is not coming to second term as a democratically elected leader. And he says he comes in as a tyrant.
But Oduchu Chuku Frank says, I have a vision that Buhari will shock Nigerians by stepping down before the end of this year voluntarily, since he's a man of integrity.
I have to read this one from Gidayo Tijani, who actually says that Baba Giladima was not in APC before the 2015 elections and APC won over an incumbent president. It's 7 months to elections. That is when you will know how worthless they are to the movement. He says Buhari is actually an enigma.
Those are your comments, so please keep them flowing on our Facebook page at DW Africa.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link with me, Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. We are live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, so feel free to drop us a line on the stories we are covering.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, despite being eliminated from the World Cup football, Senegal still remains the holy grail of football in Africa.
I want to become a professional like Idrissa Gana Gouay and play for Senegal to help my parents, my family. I always wanted to be a footballer because my father is also a footballer.
Make sure you don't miss out on that. But first we head to Sierra Leone and former Vice President Victor Faure and former Mines Minister Minkailu Masanyaware have been arrested on corruption charges. The arrests come the day after a separate commission appointed by President Julius Maada Bio alleged that corruption was rampant under his predecessor Ernest Koroma, including the theft of state property and funneling of state contracts to officials, relatives and close friends. I spoke to our correspondent Claudia Anthony, who starts by telling us why the two have been arrested.
There are allegations of corruption which overshadow the 2017 pilgrimage of Muslims to Mecca. Minkailu Mansari, who was the former Minister of Mines, was the head of the Hajj Committee. Victor Faure, the former vice president, was alleged to have received $80,000 in cash withdrawn from the Hajj account.
President Bio says corruption in Sierra Leone is a national security issue. Do you think he has what it takes to fight it?
If President Bio has what it takes to tackle corruption, at least reduce corruption, well then the outcome of this transitional report will indicate such. President Bio received the transitional report yesterday with recommendation to set up a judge-led special commission of inquiry with a limited time frame and mandate to recover all stolen or inappropriately converted state funds and other assets, including buildings, land, hundreds of vehicles still unaccounted for. So we wait to see the outcome of the report itself, because action has to be taken. The action is the setting up of the commission that will inquire into what actually happened and then make the recommendations needed to make.
This report implicates the former ruling party APC, pointing at massive corruption. How have they responded to these allegations?
The APC has issued a press release condemning the report, saying most of the content of the reports are lies and they asked for evidence to be shown. At the moment, the former president, Ernest Koroma, is in England and is expected to react today, according to some members of the APC. There are other people, it must be stated that up to 50 persons were named in the report, and this document recommends that all named in the report must not travel out of the country, except with permission from the Attorney General and Minister of Justice.
What exactly is the general feeling among Sierra Leoneans about these new revelations of corruption?
The general feeling is split. People don't really think about the country. They are thinking on party lines. I met a group of young men playing a popular game, draft we call it, and this is what they had to say.
I am happy. I'm particularly happy because these people have spoiled this country. They have eaten plenty and plenty of money. A single person chops millions and millions. Why should that be?
We are all Sierra Leoneans, and we all suffered. You want me to support them? I don't feel fine.
Those are voices of Sierra Leoneans giving their feedback, or rather their views on that story. And what about it? What do you think? Is the government doing enough? Go to our DW page, Africa, and leave us your comments.
Views on. Now, despite the sad departure from the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia, football in Senegal remains the holy grail of sports. You could say boys learn to control a ball about the same time they can walk with a dream of making it as a professional player. And why not? Senegal has produced dozens of great international players signed in clubs in France, the UK, here in Germany, Monaco and Spain.
And Jane, of course, Sadio Mane, Senegal's team captain and Liverpool player, is a hero for many young boys, not just for his talents on the pitch, but because he started out much like them. And as DW's Emmanuel Landai found out, it's a booming business for various academies that offer soccer skills in Senegal. We start off with the voice of Moussa Camara, who owns Diambar Academy, located in the town of Salé.
There are very good young Senegalese players because they are playing in the street all time. Especially in the regions, there is more space than in the car, and playing so much naturally improves their skills. There's a lot of talent. When they come to the Diambars, it is for a good education. We train them to be men first, and if they can succeed in football, so much the better.
Moussa Camara spent 30 years in France as a sports educator before moving back to support his countrymen through sports, he says. The Jambars, which means soldiers, go on scouting days around the country to test and select what they hope will be the best players.
The centre is an academy that welcomes youngsters from the age of 12, which we select from across Senegal, to give them a chance in life through sports and through education. They all dream of being professional footballers.
A lot of the boys actually have members of their family who've played for the Senegalese national team, like Boubacar Diallo, aged 15.
I want to become a professional like Idrissa Gana Gouay and play for Senegal to help my parents, my family. I always wanted to be a footballer because my father is also a footballer.
His dad, Mamadou Diallo, played in the United States for the Tampa Bay Mutiny in Florida for 5 years. Most of this generation of Jambars, though, dream of playing in Europe.
I would like to play for Real Madrid. Playing abroad is better because here in Senegal, football isn't very developed. In Europe, you get paid, but here the money is too little. And also, there are more people watching you there. You can go and play for a big club. There are great players and so on.
It's the same for Amadou Mata Koundou. His brother is a former goalkeeper for the national team. He's pinned his hopes on a European club.
Later, I want to play at least in Spain or in England, because that is where the biggest championships in the world are. I want to be seen.
Moussa Camara, the director, isn't surprised. With player transfers worth millions of euros, it's enough to make any young footballer dream. The monthly salary in Senegal is around 100 euros a month for unskilled labour. This year, five former Jambars were selected for the National World Cup team. Sadio Mane, the team captain, trained at Génération Foot, another sports boarding school just like the Jambar Academy. Between them, they've put out some of Senegal's best players who've been playing on the biggest football stage in the World Cup.
We know there's a low success rate. Few are selected. They are around 100 here at the Jambars. But we try and do our job the best we can so that they will be able to make it to the top level clubs.
Making it in football is far from easy. But youth in Senegal don't lack motivation despite the obstacles and stiff competition. Thanks to football idols like Didier Drogba from Ivory Coast or George Weah in Liberia. They've proved that even after their playing careers ended, they can do as much for their country off the field as they did whilst running with a ball.
That is DW's Emmanuel Lande. And of course, it's very interesting how these boys are determined. I'll say like Lupita, their dreams are valid.
Absolutely.
I know you're disappointed that Senegal was out last week, of course.
Yes, indeed. Like any African, everybody was disappointed. But there is always a next time. So we hope next time it will be much, much better, Zippy.
Yeah, and of course, a motivation for these boys. So keep listening to Africa Link.
Speaking out.
The first ever Global Disability Summit in London, UK, will take place on the 24th July this year. It aims at ensuring people with disabilities are consistently and systematically included in the international development and receive humanitarian assistance.
Well, ahead of the summit, co-hosted by Kenya, DW's Andrew Wasike traveled to Nandi County in Kenya's Rift Valley region, where cultural beliefs and attitudes towards a disability are fueling pain and anguish for vulnerable families and had led to the death of many living with disability.
I visited a playful 10-year-old Nurdin Brighton at the Kaptisi Special School in Nandi County in Kenya. Nurdin has Down syndrome, a genetic disorder associated with characteristic facial features and mild to moderate intellectual disability. The community immediately singled him out as a curse and would point fingers at the family whenever any bad luck befell them, demanding for his life as per their customs. Some of the children born with disabilities in Nandi are thrown down pit latrines or left out in the cold to die. According to their tradition, failure to get rid of such children will bring a curse not only to the family, but the entire community. Despite not being able to talk, a cheerful Nurdin makes noises and uses hand signals to communicate.
Unta kwenda. Maji. Maji. Si nimekuambia ukunywe maji umekata.
Fatuma Juma is Nurdin's mother. She got pregnant with Nurdin at the age of 45, now being 58. She told me how her culture almost robbed her of her child like it does to many in her community.
I said, even if it's bad or good, it's my child. So I started taking care of my child, and my mother really helped me. My sisters, they told me, why did you give birth at this age? The child will not survive. So I wondered, what do I do? I was afraid. Some say the child is bewitched. Some people will not even invite you to their house when you have such a child.
The treatment from her community shocked her, and she lost all her friends.
You fear even going out with that small child in the car. People look at you. You fear even yourself. You get stigma. But I thank God that all that I went through now, I'm able to see that Noor grew up.
At Noor School, I spoke to Nicholas Malongo, the head teacher of Kaptisi Special School, who goes out of his way every day to take Noor to and from his home on his motorcycle. Malongo wants to see changes in Kenya's education system, not only to sensitize the community, but also to empower people living with disability.
Our education system in Kenya, that special needs learners, especially those who are mentally challenged, may not actually feature very well in those areas. You'll find most of the parents to own the education of such learners because they feel there is no much gain they are going to get out of their investing in them.
Jane Duta is a researcher and program service administrator from the Voluntary Services Overseas, VSO Kenya. She says her organization brings volunteers from across the world who are also suffering from various disabilities to sensitize the community and fight culture-based discrimination.
Specifically in Nandi, we are doing ICS, whereby young people from UK come and volunteer in a certain community. Our main goal is to ensure children with disability able to realize their life aspirations and also issues of persons with disability, most specifically in the field of education.
Nduta told me that so far, the area where they have visited, local villagers interacting with disabled people from Europe have realized that living with disabilities has nothing to do with curses or witchcraft. According to the Kenya National Special Needs Education Survey, 10% of the population is disabled, that is at least more than 4 million people. At the upcoming Global Disability Summit 2018 in London, UK, which will be co-hosted by Kenya and the UK Department for International Development, Nurdin's mother hopes that African governments will roll out policies to support newborns who are disabled. She hopes that educating rural communities on disability can help prevent the deaths of many children.
DW's Andrew Wasike in Kenya. Now, going back to our top story, we are still receiving a lot of comments on the political crisis in the ruling party in Nigeria All Progressive Congress. And Zippy, what are people saying?
Emeka Obi is writing on our Facebook page, the rate of killings by Fulani herdsmen in Nigeria and the protection they enjoy is part of the reason for the breakup of APC. And he says Buhari will lose woefully in the 2019 elections. Those are your comments. Thank you very much for
and
joining.
And continue with that conversation on our Facebook page. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.